Hello and welcome to the King Heroes Journey podcast. My name is Beth Martins. I have the huge pleasure of being here with Mike Winner, the co-founder of Alpha Vedic. And I will just take a few minutes while people are jumping on to maybe let's just chat while before I do a formal introduction and let people get into the space and make themselves comfortable. We got a few people in the chat already. Hello, Sweet Pea, and Kelly Effie is here. Yay, so good.
Nice.
Yeah, and can you describe your location again to me? We were talking about this just before we got on.
Yeah. I was telling you that you were kind of prefacing this that Alpha Vedic and what we're all up to, we were kind of ahead of the game, right? Ahead of knowing kind of what was coming, which is true. We've been, Dr. Lando and I have been talking about the impending, some sort of global catastrophe, manufactured catastrophe, to bring in this, you know, technocratic control state. We've seen the writing on the wall from Rockefeller lockstep documents to inside chatter that Dr. Lando and his co-patriots knew about 20, 30 years ago. And so we could see it ramping up to, you know, from the second Obama administration on, like it was just, you could see the screws being turned. And I would spend hours of long conversations with he and other friends, like, what are we going to do? Because at that point, at that time, my family and I were living in Los Angeles. I was working in the entertainment industry, actually, in independent film and music, which was my background. But I've been, quote unquote, woke. I mean, I'm not a big fan of that term. Yeah. But I've been very aware of you know, the realities that we're facing with centralized controllers and the esoteric, you know, occult stuff and secret societies and all that since the 90s. And I saw it ramping up because you could see it. It's in their plans. And so we were talking about, hey, should we have a boat here at the harbor to bounce out? How are we going to bug out, you know, if collapse, something, you know, happens? And then finally, you know, my wife and I decided just to move. So we found my business partners. What's up, Jeremiah? That's cool. So my business partners had moved from Humboldt County up to Del Norte County on the Smith River to extend our farm out for Alpha Vedic on the river here. And so we came up and visited and just fell in love with the place. We were actually looking to get a place maybe in Central California. Fell in love with the place. It's not even like you're in California here. You're in what we call the state of Jefferson, which was a kind of separatist, libertarian idea back in, I believe, the 70s, between Southern Oregon and what's kind of now known as the Emerald Triangle of Northern California. and so that's called the state of Jefferson. And it was a separatist movement of libertarian-minded folks to leave California and Oregon and create a new state, the state of Jefferson. And that mentality still really kind of reigns supreme here. It's a very much ingrained in a lot of the way people think up here, which is just very independent, very sovereign-minded, which we really like. And I guess you could call Del Norte was definitely like Trump town, where we are here, which is not your typical California county. But you know, whatever your feelings are about Trump, that gives you a little bit of the mindset here. It was definitely very much more in tune with, classic Americana, family values, conservatism, agrarianism, back to the land, very Christian, very kind of traditional American, right? Whatever that is. So, there's a lot of values and elements to that I really appreciate and like. And, so it's very kind of like throwback here moving here. So anyways, the other thing that I like about living here is that we live essentially in the Six Rivers National Forest. Mm. So there's not much more development that can happen here. It's all forest land, national forest land. We live in actually the Smith River Recreation Area. And so we live on the Smith River. And then our farm is off grid about 25 miles as the crow flies from my house where Alpha Vedic farm is. And that's about 20 miles from any power lines, any internet or anything like that. We do have satellite internet and solar. And we have water from water catchment systems and from the river. So, it's a it's been quite a journey, and I can't tell you how happy I am to live here.
Yeah, no kidding. It sounds like paradise. Well, if you are new to the King Heroes Journey podcast, you're in the right place. If you like strong men who are stepping out and, preparing for the worst, well, you know, preparing for the worst and planning for the best, right? Yes. That's what I see you guys doing, because it's not enough just to see all of the lies out there. And that's what I love about those that I dub King Heroes. I gave myself that job to dub you guys King Heroes. In that you are willing to step out and, look odd because you're ahead of your time. You're willing to say hard things that bring about criticism and people taking you down, which I'll maybe ask you some questions about. And I have to imagine that you are doing this for a lot more than just yourself, right? If we just had to look after ourselves, it would be pretty simple. You wouldn't need an organization. You wouldn't need a farm. You wouldn't need a podcast. You wouldn't need all these things. So I welcome you here if you're new to it. I've had some really good subs coming in on the channel lately. And just by way of introduction, by the way, Mike and I met because of Anarchapulco 2021, which is about to happen starting March 8 to 11. And we're both presenting at it. Yeah, so good. So I was, it was one night and you just popped into the chat and I'm like, hey, you want to come and be on my interview? That's how I roll in the middle of the night. You do too. And so that's an amazing event. I'll give you a chance to get your ticket if you haven't already for that. And no doubt, Mike, you have a code that can get them some savings for it. I want to talk about your reunion summit that is coming up. That's like super exciting. So I've got a link ready to show people about that. And in the meantime, I'll say that Mike is the co-founder and technical director for Alpha Vedic, which I know how to spell now. I got that a couple of times wrong. My deep apologies for that. And as he's talking about his off-grid farm and wellness co-op focused on innovative solutions for a new era of self-mastery, health, independence, and personal sovereignty. So Mike, along with Dr. Barlando, who is on here on Friday as well, thanks to Mike helping me set that up.
Nice.
They host a weekly podcast called AlphaCast that delves into the vast range of topics related to the new cutting edge terrain of health, freedom, and spirit science. You are in my eyes, you are a multi-passionate. It's not the best word to use on a King Hero. There's, you obviously have many areas of interest and skill. And it's a great example of how, in my perspective, as someone who coaches people on their purpose and to turn business, their purpose into a business, then it is composed of, it's like nature. It's a huge variety of elements that come together to make one human soul. And so every time I see somebody with multiple areas of interest, it just makes me happy because I know you're more in alignment with nature than what society would recommend at times. As you might have heard Mike say as well, he came from a life of making film and studying history at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He aims to elevate the conversation of global consciousness through captivating positive and positive storytelling processes. We're going to talk a lot today specifically about decentralization. This is one of my all-time favorite topics, and we'll probably have to have a few more interviews down the line if you're open to it, but I would love to focus today on cryptocurrency and what you guys have been innovating in that field. It's been a long time in the coming for me. Luckily, I have been listening to people over the years and tuning in with guys like yourself and just getting into it enough. I don't know much of anything about it, but I knew enough to start investing myself and seeing it as a potential road on the other side of the decimation of the economy that we are facing. So for Mike, it's all about decentralized power and returning to our spiritual selves in the process, which is one of my favorite things also, that the realm of finances and spirituality and all of those things, they interconnect and collide, and so they should, of course, right? It's to me one of the signs that you're pointing towards the truth. And so he is excited for a future where energy and regenerative agriculture will give the ability to create systems where we can live in abundance, not scarcity. So yes. Welcome, Mike. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Yeah, wherever you want to go into, you mentioned kind of jack of all trades, master of none was kind of the story of my life. You know, I couldn't focus on a specific, you know, when you're in like high school and college, you know, your academic advisors are like, what is the thing that you're going to be in your life? What are you going to do? And that's kind of how this society's been developed, right? It's like, find your trade or your passion. You're going to be a doctor or a lawyer. And I actually went to university to be a lawyer, believe it or not, that's what society, what I felt like what was success, right? Sucking cess is really, if you think about it, the word success is not what it really, what we've been told. But I could never fit into that box. And then I discovered I was always into making films. I was, since a little kid, had a camera in my hand recording things. And that I was lucky enough to have a bunch of roommates beginning of sophomore year that were film majors. And I was like, what am I doing? I'm hating school. I called my parents as soon as I had the epiphany that I wanted to be a film major. And I told them I'm switching from pre-law to film. And they were very supportive because I'm very lucky to have wonderful parents. And so I ended up switching to film. And actually at that time, University of Santa Barbara, California, UCSB, go Gauchos, was the number one film theory program in the country. So it was actually quite difficult, and but very rewarding, because I found that I actually really enjoyed the theoretical aspects of film almost more than production. I loved the philosophical elements of it and what really film is and storytelling and all that. So it was an amazing experience, and it's kind of led me to where I am today. I did work in Hollywood on and off for 10 years as an independent producer. And really what it showed to me was that what my thing I love to do most is produce, is the creative kind of, you know, aspects of producing, which is just taking ideas and putting people together and making projects happen, whether that be a podcast or a cryptocurrency. I think that's what I excel at the most, but that does lend to a vast array of topics and interests, from producing my garden out here in my permaculture farm to producing wonderful dinners for my family at night. So I do all the cooking too. So, but yeah, so that's kind of, the Hollywood thing didn't work out, because I realized that's not where I'm supposed to be. That's not the best place to be for anyone who's trying to really change the world right now. However, I do believe even Hollywood can come around through decentralization, through independent film, and through the ability to finance projects through decentralized means. And new technology. So there's a solution for everything with this decentralization revolution that's happening. The only problem is we need to be decentralized. And currently, a lot of the crypto world is not. It's been co-opted by traditional Wall Street forces and centralized concepts of developing technology that come from Silicon Valley. And so I would say 95% of the crypto scene, the crypto industry, is not where we want to be going. And that includes projects like Ethereum. That includes a lot of these big time projects. They're just, and we can talk about this, how they aren't properly decentralized, and they weren't done in a way that is in tune with where this technology should be going, a la the original Bitcoin white paper.
And we'll get into that. I'm curious, though, what was that point where you started to use, say, your filmmaking and other means to speak the truth to, you know, whether it was uncover lies or start speaking candidly about those things that obviously weren't popular. You know, they're more popular now, a lot more popular, but still, there's the vast majority of people are going to have cognitive dissonance when you talk.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I get it every day. I got it yesterday from a family member who, you know, let it leak out to me that they didn't understand how my beliefs are so crazy and how, you know, my wife can put up with it. And, you know, I'm always hearing it. Like, you've got where do you have these crazy beliefs from? You know, fortunately I've been into the kind of, truth, searching for truth since I was a kid. Came through to me through dreams and through out-of-body experiences, which led me to see, you know, directly that this reality is a living universe, that we're not in a Cartesian model of clockwork reality, right, where everything's a machine, which is what modernity stresses, but we're actually in a living, breathing, conscious universe. And so I was aware of that at a very young age. And then that led me down into a number of rabbit holes. Actually, I say this a lot. David Icke was a big influence on me as a teenager, or actually really as a young adult. I was working at actually at Nordstrom selling women's shoes as one of my first jobs out of college. And every day at lunch, I'd go on my lunch break in the mall over to Borders Books, and I would go into the esoteric section, and I found the David Icke books. And this was pre 9/11. So this was like turn 99, 2000 when I forgot the name of the book right now, but it was The Biggest Lie, I believe, was the one where he talks about the reptilians and everything. But I would hide that. Sorry, David, but I took the book and I would put it in a special section of Borders because I would read it every day on my lunch break. I'd go find it and I'd have 30 minutes and I'd read as much as I could and I'd bookmark it and then I'd put it back in the shelf because I was too poor to buy it. And I would just hang out in that Borders section and read as much as I could on all of this stuff. And then I just started buying them and ingesting as much material as I could. And I talked about how my father was big, he got me into the economic side by having me read The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is that really pivotal book for me by G. Griffin that talks about the creation of the Fed and everything on Jekyll Island back in 1913, 1919, when they basically created the income tax and the original central banking system, or wasn't the original, but it was the newest iteration in the 20th century that led to essentially the banking monopolies we have now and the debt-based system. And that opened my eyes up to a lot of the basically fiction that we deal with in this world, and how even money itself is fiction, and how these are just debt-based instruments. It's not even money. It's the fiat dollar bill is not even real money. It's just a piece of debt. It's a debt note, right? So that was really important for me. And then I started talking about it with all my friends. I wasn't bashful. You know, I would share these books and everyone, I just became known as like the wacky conspiracy theory guy in my group of friends. And that was fine. And I was okay with that. And I then through one of my best friends who was a DJ, I've been a DJ for 20 years too in the underground house music scene in the West Coast. And his dad was Dr. Berlando, of all people. So that's how I got connected with Bear. And so we started having a lot of deep chats about reality and the esoteric and spirituality. And that's what led eventually to our partnering with Alpha Vedic eventually doing a podcast started off and on about 4 years ago. And then we got very serious about a year and a half ago, doing it every week. But it was funny, we were doing podcasts on germ theory and like Beauchamp versus Pasteur and the history of terrain versus germ theory before all of this stuff happened. We were talking about it, and it was just a few other people on YouTube, like Amanda Vollmer, Stefan Lanka, Rappaport. There was a few other people out there talking about germ theory, but we felt like we were on an island of this truth, and we had to get it out. So that's kind of when I first started really doing the podcasting thing. But on the film side, I was always doing kind of alien stuff and stuff about hidden history and all that, kind of YouTube mini docs and things like that for years. But it wasn't really until Bear Lando and I started doing AlphaCast that I started getting more out in the public eye and talking about these kind of subjects.
Mm-hmm. And did people come out of the woodwork to call you out and attack you and stalk you?
So that happens a little bit, but to be honest, I feel like because where Bear and I come from and the truth that we resonate, and I feel like I have a kind of a protection around us or something. I don't know. We're very in tune with some certain spiritual forces and if you will, and we feel like we're being protected. So fortunately, we haven't had out of that. Almost all of our reaction response to AlphaCast and to everything we do with AlphaVedic has been just absolutely positive. Mm-hmm. If you go look at like our likes to dislike ratio, it's phenomenal on our videos. We've had some trolls attack us, but for the most part, it's been like very, very positive. I think a lot of that comes the fact that Bear has 40 years experience as a bioterrain specialist using terrain, his idea, you know, his direct relationship with the terrain to heal, to help people heal. He's not a healer. He'll always say that. He just shows people the way and then has different modalities that uses as a practitioner. Now he retired, but he did, and he saw it. He saw the blood work, the live blood analysis. He saw the people turn their, that were coming to him with all these crazy prognoses from the allopathic Western medical system telling you have a month to live, blah, 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 and seeing them turn around their lives with this knowledge and with what he knew. And I think because the proof was in the pudding with what actually all the people, the thousands of people he helped, you know, we're coming from a place of science because empirically we were showing that this stuff's real. And so it's hard to debate that. I mean, you can always debate things, but it's hard to counter that besides the typical gaslighting and all that stuff. We have been, you know, we've had a fair share of that, but for the most part, it's been immensely positive and supportive. So I can't say enough about how amazing this journey's been. So good.
Yeah, as a business coach, I would say that you have your audience in front of you, right? Because if you've got a bunch of attackers, it means that you're not with your right people. And usually the reason for that is because you're not being authentically yourself. And there are some of those that have built up their, like, for example, my YouTube channel. I only started building it after I started speaking my truth. So I, for the most part, I only have people that it's a mutual love affair. We love each other, and I'm not getting stalkers unless I have a particular guest that, you know, has himself got some trail of negativity behind it. But, you know, that's par for the course. I even feel sometimes honored by an attacker because you know you're over the target when people start to try and take you down. But
got that right. Well, that was awesome. the same thing here. You know, working in the industry, the entertainment industry, the DJ culture. Yes, on Facebook, I don't use Facebook anymore. I don't use those. Even I stopped using Instagram. Because I had a lot of support on Instagram actually, but because I've always been kind of speaking my truth, but definitely on Facebook, massive triggering. I had a couple different trigger instances about the mask thing, trying to educate people about germ theory that just went totally negative and down, pretty bad spiraling of bad energy. And so I ended up actually pulling the post because I just felt like it was causing more harm than good. And then I realized that that's not the platform anymore to use because it's intentionally has energetics around it to cause, you know, dissension and cause confusion and just people that are very closed-minded and very much just trapped into the current kind of control paradigm. So we pretty much just use, we were one of the early adopters of Telegram. So we've got a very kind of very active Telegram group that's very much on this on the level to the point where it's like more almost it's funny. We have problems with people telling their truth to the point where it's very radical, right? Where we're arguing about different aspects of terrain theory. So people come in from normie world and they're like, what is going on here? So
Do you have a link to your Telegram group? Because it's so fun, all of the things that you're posting there. I'd love people to see it. And I'd also love them to come over onto my Telegram, which I'm just starting as a result of just what you're saying, that you know, I'm feeling the push out of the mainstream.
Yeah. So we barely even post on Instagram or Facebook anymore on our actual Alpha Vedic account sometimes to... bums out some of my partners because they're still heavily on it on the Alpha Vedic side of things. But like Bear and I are just so over those centralized corrupted forces of the technocrats that while we know, and as a business coach, I'm sure you get it. Like there's important aspects to marketing on those, you know, systems because most people are still using them. We barely use them anymore. So, Telegram, our Telegram is t.me/AlphaVedic. And you can join the community there. We also have t.me/AlphaVedic News, which is just our broadcast channel if you just want to get updates. But if you want to join the community, it's the t.me/AlphaVedic. Yeah, right there. And then also we are on Discord too, which is another platform that we use, which is just alphavedic.com/Discord, which I like because you can go a little deeper there. It's more like a traditional forum structure where you can have different subjects and topics in different areas. So you can go in if you're just into like conspiracy or you're just into alternative health or into fitness. We have rooms for all that, including crypto and decentralized blockchain stuff. So, but yeah, no, that's where we need to be going. We need to be, this is the kind of where, what we're talking about a lot with Reunion Summit and with Coral is the idea of having these decentralized communities where you can find your tribe and like-minded people, but then also connect with other communities too and have kind of like these pods everywhere of people working together to create, you know, the reality we all want to see. And that was the original kind of idea with Facebook, right? Even though we know Facebook was probably co-opted and created by intelligence agencies from the very beginning. And I'm not really buying the Zuckerberg narrative. And I really believe there's a reason why it is the dominating technology. And there's a great story by, I'm blanking on his name, but he was one of the original technologists who came up with social media and how essentially Facebook just totally stole his idea and manipulated it into what it is now. And we hear same things about Google with the CIA and or the NSA and stuff. So, you know, these are things that we need to be aware of. And Snowden's done a great job of explaining how this works and how private companies work in conjunction with the intelligence systems, which are further controlled up the line by private interest and elite interest. So decentralization is everything. Because like it or not, guys, we're moving into a more digital world. It is part of, I believe, the new kind of epoch we're moving into as we get out of the Pisces era epoch into this new age of Aquarius, which is more air, which is more ethereal, right? And I believe the digital systems that we're engaging with right now are kind of like the early stone man technology, the very dense version of where we'll go in terms of more analog, organic, psychic connectivity that we'll have. So the internet is our kind of our bridge towards that. And so in order to really do it in a more in tune with nature, it needs to be decentralized. Because nature is inherently decentralized.
Right. That's an amazing point. Do you want to talk about now? I can't imagine anybody's not heard of cryptocurrency at this point in the truth community. But can you talk about, you know, if you go right back to the beginning, like what is a cryptocurrency, say, compared to a fiat currency?
Yeah. So, I mean, what we're dealing with too in the quote unquote truther community right now is I think a lot of misinformation and lack of proper education about really what decentralized blockchain is and what it can be. And it's important to know the history and important to know the technology in a simplified way, because a lot of people see it as kind of the centralized, you know, form of the new slave money that will be coming out, that will be on everybody's digital, you know, vaccine passports, and how they'll control everybody through cryptocurrency. And that's very much a reality. That's true. And we live in a reality of polarity, right? And so on one side, we have this very much liberating technology. And on the other side, yes, we have a very scary controlling technology. And that's why education and activism and doing and going down the right community collaboration and understanding this stuff is important so that we can empower ourselves to do it the right way. And so obviously fiat money is not money. It's a currency by force that is essentially a debt based upon debt notes that were created by centralized banking systems and by governments, which, by the way, all governments are just corporations. Governments in today's world are not operating by their original charter, by their original creation, which the original idea of government was just to protect individual liberties and freedoms and maintain a society based around a charter or a pact with the people. And governments, since the really Well, this goes back into a lot of esoteric stuff and a lot of history, but for a long time, it came out of the Roman time, really, Romans. And now I'm even starting to question the history of Rome, but it's like, you go down all these rabbit holes and stuff gets so crazy. But we know that they're really based on trusts and they're based on maritime law and based on corporate structure. And so essentially, money itself has stopped being money a long time ago. Now we know we did have a gold standard that was actually flourishing in the 19th century, where a lot of currency, which was at that time still dollar bill, you know, we had paper currency, but it was based on a gold standard. And the importance of knowing that is that we had an independent standard for divining the value of what we use as a medium of exchange for time and energy. That's why we need currency. Currency is a way for us to essentially take our time and energy and place it upon an external value metric that allows us to do commerce and to engage in ways so that we can enjoy a more kind of enriching life. You know, traditionally, we started with bartering systems, you know, thousands of years ago. Well, in our known history, I think we had very elevated and elegant forms of currency pre-diluvian, pre-deluge, right? In times of antiquity of Atlantis and Lumeria. But in terms of our traditional known history of currency, we went from doing things like shells and, you know, things that were scarcity that we could provide value with, and eventually found that gold was the best medium of exchange. And that was really where we had some of the most kind of cultural renaissance times of recent time, is because we had a hard money that wasn't manipulatable, that centralized forces couldn't control because it's limited resource that takes mining and takes. So this was a wonderful thing to use, and it was a great innovation and allowed us to flourish in the 19th century when a lot of Europe and a lot of countries were on the gold standard. It's deflationary, which gives us a longer time preference. Since we're not stressing on our money losing value, we could engage in long-term projects because we knew we had savings and we knew we had the ability to work together upon a sound resource that lasted a long time. So that's why we had these beautiful cities, and this was true actually back in the times of even the Catholic Church, because we had a gold standard. So we had cathedrals and we had all these works of art with the Renaissance, and with the 19th century, we had all this evolution of development that turned into, of course, the Industrial Revolution and all of that. And of course, as always with humanity, we have dark forces at play that saw this as something that was counterintuitive to their needs, because we had the kind of the at the same time, we also had this liberation of thought and the idea of man as an independent sovereign. And we had that with the different revolutions and, you know, this return to classicism and everything. And so we were on the cusp of actually kind of an amazing golden era where we had a gold standard and we had people understanding liberty and understanding these kind of true liberal ideas of man being someone who has the God-given inalienable rights to be free, right? And be away from the powers of a traditional king or a feudal system. And so the powers that were in control for eons said, we can't have that. So what they did is they immediately did everything in their power to get us off the gold standard. And that's where the creature of Jekyll Island comes into play, and where we have the fiat money systems come back. And we had had fiat before, and fiat had always failed. Like the Roman Empire had brought in fiat towards the end of the Roman days, and that had gone into mass inflation. And that's what always happens. So fiat itself is just basically a power structure forcing upon the people a printed money that's based on a note of promise, a promissory note where consensus lies on a centralized force, guns, slavery, whatever that centralized force is being used is where is providing the value behind the money. And so actually, we still had somewhat of a gold standard behind the U.S. dollar up until 1971, of course. And there's a whole history here, and there's a ton of books that you can read, like The Bitcoin Standard is a great book to read. It does a wonderful history of all this. But so fiat nowadays is essentially just a global debt instrument that is backed up by human capital, by literally every baby born, provides the capital for the different trusts that are used to provide the value metric behind this debt instrument. And the only reason why we don't have mass inflation right now is because the Ponzi scheme, one, is using globalization to push the buck down the line. They're also using the fraudulent markets, Wall Street markets, in a beautiful Ponzi, which we saw during the Trump administration, where they use that, these different really complex financial instruments and derivatives to essentially provide value metrics for the economy and all sorts of different instruments they use, right? Which in turn are just being propped up by the money they're printing, which is this fiat money. So it's a big cyclical boom and crash cycle that they've been able to perpetuate based because of war, because of misery, essentially. And this has been really, besides some of these little golden eras like we had in the 19th century where we had a pretty solid gold standard and stuff, it's been pretty much the history of mankind. So in 2008, of course, we had the big financial collapse due to the real estate derivative bubble. And we had this white paper come out there's a lot of debate on who Satoshi Nakamoto is, who is the author of the Bitcoin white paper. I personally believe, on my more mystical side of things, that it was some sort of ascended master or a force that came down to help humanity. I don't believe like one. Yeah, exactly. I don't believe it was like some sort of intelligence operation, because it doesn't make sense. If you read the white paper and the idea of solving the double spend problem with an open source public blockchain, that doesn't lend to digitized slavery. It is the opposite of that. So I believe it is a good force that was behind the white paper. And I highly recommend everybody reading that if you haven't read it, because while it's technical, there's so much inspiration behind it. It's just so brilliant. And so basically you had the cypherpunk movement in the 80s, which were anarchists and people who believed that we could have sovereignty through computing era by allowing people to essentially hack systems and have control over systems in the digital era that would allow us to have freedom of information of everything, allow us to have no borders, allow us to have trustless systems so we didn't have to have centralized authority or middlemen. And that's really what was the inspiration behind the Bitcoin white paper. The only problem with the cypherpunks had was we needed some sort of currency, some sort of medium of exchange, so that we could have ability to interact with each other and do commerce. Because the history of humankind, we've always needed. That's why we've come up with different technologies for money, because that's how this reality demands. Until we can like manifest whatever we want out of the ether, right? Like the ascended masters, we have to do commerce, because that's just how civilizations develop. It's like, you have a skill set, I have a skill set. Why not be smart and have you do what you're best at, and I'll do what I'm best at, and then we will barter. But then that gets really hard to do as that system gets more complex. So we need some form of exchange. So the cypherpunks were like, let's make digital money. The problem with digital money is if like the way digital is just zeros and ones code, right? So you can copy it. Like, it's like if I send you an email of a PDF of an information, you can easily send that out to a million other people. That's the power of the network effect. But with money, what's to stop you from me sending you a digital dollar and then you just forwarding that off to a million people, right? Mm-hmm. That's a serious problem. That was called the double spend problem. And so what Satoshi Nakamoto and the white paper did with Bitcoin is he found out found out a brilliant way to finally stop that issue with forwarding money, because that would obviously make it worthless, which is what fiat systems do with fractional reserve banking, right? So anyways, it was a brilliant idea, and it was called proof of work, and it was a type of consensus algorithm in a technology that used a public blockchain, which is just a public ledger or a public database that anybody can access, essentially a truth machine that uses specific ways to apply blocks of truth on top of each other so that they're immutable. And that is done through proof of work, which is essentially just computers competing against each other to solve really complex math problems, and all doing it on a public network that everybody can see. And it applied a number of really interesting things, like what free markets have, which is supply and demand and competition, and then applying that to the medium of exchange so that the computer who solved the problem within 10 minutes of time, and that problem has a difficulty rating that goes up and down according to what the network needs, that person wins a little reward in the form of a Bitcoin. And so just like mining gold, people are now competing to mine Bitcoin. But unlike mining gold, this also is providing a consensus so that everybody understands what the truth machine, this truth ledger, is compiling. So it does get a little complex, but think of it as a blockchain is essentially just a truth machine. It's just a ledger that uses immutable blocks of truth every 10 minutes in case of Bitcoin to standardize that truth across a public network in a digital way. It's extremely revolutionary, but it's also ageless. Like, what were the pyramids? The pyramids, the Egyptian pyramids and the Mayan pyramids, that was their version of blockchain. Those were immutable records they knew they could put in stone and put their signature on that would be something people could see thousands of years later, and that's their truth, that were put on a physical location on this planet in a way that would be there for a long, long time. That's essentially what a blockchain does too, but in a digital way that fits within this new epoch, this new Aquarian age.
Mm-hmm. Wow, great description. That's probably the clearest I've ever heard it. That's awesome. You know, you get yourself out of that place, like you said, where there's no middleman anymore. There's no matter of needing a banker or somebody to trust to verify. It's there embedded in the process. I also mm-hmm. know one of the things, like you've said, the difference between fiat being basically unlimited. They can just go and print more every time they want to send somebody $1 trillion, or you know, pick up the bill for all the destroyed businesses that they've created, especially this past year. And, you know, it's been around since 2008. And why do you think people are all of a sudden all over it, right? Like we go from, you know, I think I got my Bitcoin when it was like, you know, 10,000 or less. And all, and today I believe it's up around 45,000 US. And, you know, it's exploding into popularity. And yet it's probably just beginning by world standards, right, in terms of volume. And, you know, big companies, the credit card companies are buying into it, and Apple bought into it, and Elon Musk bought into it, and all that kind of thing. So what's happening right now that is making this so relevant?
Well, I think what's happening is finally people are, well, I think the pandemic played a big factor because it woke up a lot of people to the perilous state of world finance systems, because everything is so highly over leveraged and inflationary, and the one way that the centralized actors could hide the inflation is by manipulating the food markets and by bringing subsidies to farms and doing a lot of they play a lot of games and tricks through centralization and through government manipulation with big corporations. So the one way that we will see inflation in our own lives is when price of bread skyrockets, right, in the markets. And they were able to really counteract that through stuff like GMOs, through big ag, through things where they're manipulating, right, through all sorts of different agencies. And the, what happened with the pandemic is we saw, the supply chain systems really get attacked, the just-in-time supply chain systems. And people were starting to see the price of food go up a lot, price of meat especially. And I think that was one factor. The other factor is that we're dealing with the Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is capped, right, at the total 21 million coins. Mm-hmm. And so there are specific mathematics in play here. John McAfee was famous for saying that he would cut off his nether region. Bitcoin didn't hit $1 million per coin. And that people were laughing at that. He was saying that because he understood the math. And with the population we have, and with just a small amount of interest, math tells us that there's no reason Bitcoin already shouldn't be at least 100,000 a coin, at least. The reason why it's not is because of the manipulation in the centralized markets with Bitcoin. And that's a huge problem with Bitcoin and a huge problem with crypto in general, is that we have major financial players that got in back in the original ICO boom starting in 2015-16 with crypto 2.0, with like the Ethereums. We have manipulation, just like we have in the silver and gold markets. We have manipulation. So they're playing with these low, this is Bitcoin's still a very low liquidity market in terms of the overall markets out there compared to especially like commodities and currencies. But even like something like Apple, right? Tesla motor cars, it's the Bitcoin, while it's skyrocketed in the last year and a half, it's a low liquidity market that they've been able to manipulate. So they've been able to keep it really low, and they've been able to do pump and dumps like we saw in 2017-18 with the, where Bitcoin first hit 20,000 and then it dove all the way back down at one point, I think 3,500, some markets 3,000, which I wish I would have grabbed more at that time. Really, Bitcoin should be right now, I personally think, 500,000 a coin. It's just looking at the fundamentals, but they're able to play with it. And this is a huge problem we have with Bitcoin, is it's heavily leveraged. It's become in many ways like 2008. What's funny is the thing it was created to help fix, it's now become. Mm-hmm. So this is something we really need to be aware of with Bitcoin, and why we created Cordal is because there are, I'm basically a Bitcoin maximalist, but there are massive flaws with it too. And there's things that really worry me. So these are things we need to be aware of and understand. But I would say the biggest driver would be large financial systems coming in and buying large amounts of Bitcoin, because that's how bad the financial system is now. That's how bad. So we have people like Michael Saylor, for instance, right, who came in and is creating funds around Bitcoin. And they've been doing this since 2016. But we're seeing more and more big financial systems coming in. And my concern is someone like BlackRock or a big player could come in and just wipe out the market, because they have so much leverage, because it's still a small, the market is still pretty small. Fortunately, it is distributed enough where they can't just do purchases that big to really move the market, but they still have a lot of ability. And I think markets like Coinbase are scary because those aren't direct P2P exchanges, person to person. Those are centralized, and they have a lot of the coin that they can play with, and we know they do. So the market, especially the lower liquidity markets on something like Coinbase, are always being played with. So we have to be aware of that. And then we've got the bots that are in there too, that are continually manipulating algorithms and continually manipulating the buys and big sell walls and stuff like that. So one of my biggest things that I don't like with crypto right now is the trading atmosphere. And and that was really what we saw in 2017 take off, with the Lambos and everybody, turning into a crypto whale and trading. Is that because these are low liquidity, centralized markets with a lot of scams and fraud, this was not the original intention of decentralized currencies. And we're seeing a Wall Street 2.0 version using crypto. And so we developed Cordal as a counterbalance to that, and more in line with the original white paper of Bitcoin.
That's awesome. And I want to talk all about Cordal. It's super fun. But I've got a couple of really good questions in the chat here. Thanks, you guys.
Sure.
The first one, it's a classic one, and I can't hear this enough. So what happens if the grid goes down? Doesn't crypto go down as well?
Great question, and one I field a lot. And first and foremost, if the grid goes down, we're talking typically the grid would go down locally. Like, so you would still be able to access the internet via, you know, satellite, via if you have solar power, and that's something we could talk about. Cordal, we have a contingency with this. But if you're talking about a worldwide grid down situation, we're going to have a lot bigger problems than crypto. We're going to be looking at calamity beyond any historical thing you could ever consider, because everything is run on the grid now. From our dams to our electrical systems to all the nuclear reactors in the world. I mean, we're talking about calamity beyond anything we could imagine. So that is, if I don't even consider that something that would be happening anymore, because that I'm not a prepper. I'm not a doomsdayer. I'm practical. I'm an agrarian. So I can my food I grow, and I have enough food, bulk foods and stuff, that if we have issues, we're self-sufficient. But I don't delve into doomsday scenarios like that, because one, I think it's a waste of time, and two, I just don't see it happening. So however, that's not to say that we can't have large-scale grid down scenarios where we have whole states down at a time in the United States, or whole countries down. That could definitely happen. And you know, fortunately, we do have ways to stay connected on the internet. You can get power source. So if you can have solar, or you can use an off-grid way, you can access. And I know some people probably in your chat, because I know you have interviewed people that are flat movement, will say satellites don't work. Well, whatever it is, we use a satellite internet provider at the farm. So whether that's a tower beaming across to balloons, whatever your perspective is on that, we can access. Yeah, we can access the internet from an off-grid farm. So, and Bearlando is getting set up to mine Cordal, doing that on a Raspberry Pi on solar. So, but you know, for me, it's like, let's focus on real issues we have, which is how are we going to deal with centralized digital money systems and centralized internet that's trying to silence people from getting the truth out. So it's a good analogy would be like when the whole plandemic thing started, scamdemic, whatever you want to call it.
Shamdemic.
I was guilty of this going into prepper mode, because I didn't know I was watching Event 201, and then I was following that. And then I was following Wuhan very closely, because obviously with what we talk about, we understand there's no pathogenic, pathogenic infectious disease is not a reality. It's not how nature works. Germ theory is junk science. Viruses are internal. They're means to, they're a backup system for us to cleanse when we have too much toxicity, when the natural terrain is so out of funk that our natural bacterial ecology can't do the job. We have viruses come in to cleanse and to clear out foreign proteins and all and junk waste, cellular waste and material. And many viruses are actually confused on electron scanning microscopes as just cellular waste. But that being said, I still know that there are really scary people out there trying to create, germ warfare and stuff, and with stuff with who we didn't know. We didn't know if this was some kind of a digital virus or something done through EMF or done through some sort of something in the air that was poisoning people, because we saw a lot of scary stuff coming out of Wuhan, right? People falling in the middle of the street and all this stuff. So I was like, oh my gosh, are we going to see grid down scenario here and a collapse of the food system? So I was like stocking way heavier than I normally do. And I was going down all this like immediate fear, right? Fear of like, even I was guilty of collecting toilet paper and all that stuff for a while.
Yeah.
Because so we're like, is this some kind of new weapon we don't know about, right? And it became pretty clear very soon, actually, once it hit Italy and then came over to the United States, that this was the typical psyop they did, like with AIDS and what they do with all these other quote-unquote viruses. And so things calm down. And then it became very apparent once again. No, what it is a slow frog boiling in the pot system that we're up against, which is the slowly degrading human freedom over time. They're very patient through more and more centralization. Right. And so I think instead of focusing on these like very fear-focused ideas of the grid going down, or we hear a lot about, you know, the polar, you know, flip or Nibiru or all these different conspiracies that come through, right? It's whatever the hot doomsday conspiracy of the year is. Instead of focusing on that, we need to be focusing on solutions to counter the slow kind of march towards 1984 Brave New World, where we've given away all of our power and we are so dehumanized into this kind of, futuristic Blade Runner world where corporations run everything and we are essentially tied into some kind of network and we're this transhumanism and all this creepy stuff, right? That's where everything's slowly being marched towards. And they might do a bunch of psyops and stuff, but they don't want collapse. Collapse is too easy for us. Collapse would allow for revolution. Collapse would allow for systems to be changed. No, they're very content with slowly tightening the screws, keeping the brainwashing and the mind control going, keeping the ever-growing corporate, you know, monoliths getting more and more power, and doing everything they talk about on Agenda 21, 23, the Great Reset and all that. So that's what we need to be focusing on, is countering that through community, through activism, and working together as living men and women.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. So this is Steve's comment. I'm not totally sure where he's coming from, but he said slaves were sold to blogs before sold into chains. So I've heard that come up a few times, and a crow was bad-mouthing crypto in general. And, you know, so
I love Crow and Jason. Dr. Lando's been on that show a few times. Mm-hmm. There's a fundamental misunderstanding with the truth movement about the technology of blockchain. This would be like saying fire is inherently evil because it burns down stuff. Well, we know fire is regenerative too. It's very important for ecologies and force, and it's important for alchemy, right? Same thing. Blockchain is the Aquarian new technology for the digital age. And, you know, maybe blockchain is not the best. Maybe that's the inverted system trying to take over what the decentralized, I just call it a decentralized ledger, an immutable truth ledger. And so, that's great play on the language there. But once again, we need to have a fundamental understanding that this is just code. This is all it is. And if it's open source and it's decentralized, you can go look at the code yourself. And I like being old fashioned and appreciating the 1800s. And, you know, we talk a lot about this, and gold and silver is important. But I also think that's also a trap by the control system, by thinking that only the old ways are the only right ways, and not looking towards evolving towards to new technologies. And I think science in and of itself, the modicum of science, the techniques of science is important. The edifice of science, the religion of scientism is not good, just like any religion not good. Spirituality, the Godhead source, that's important. Catholicism, Islam, Judaism, that is religion, and that is putting yourself back in the chains, back in the box. Same with what scientism is doing today. So I think we need to look bigger. We need to step out of these controlling paradigms of dogma, because that in and of itself is dogma. A lot of things that Crow and Jason push is dogma. So I would love to go on Crow's show and bring these more esoteric ideas about what blockchain can be to that show, because I think it could really open up their eyes to you know, what this new technology can be and how freeing it is, and relating it to the pyramids and relating it to these ancient structures, I think is a cool kind of analogy that maybe that people can understand. So yeah, maybe that terminology isn't the best, and maybe that's the control system trying to subvert it. So I like to use decentralized immutable ledgers or truth machine, digital truth machines.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And Jay Armstrong is asking, does blockchain allow for human errors or correction of errors? Is there such thing in the blockchain, or is that not really a thing?
Yeah. So once again, this is a living, breathing technology. And a blockchain, once again, is just a community open source. I mean, a blockchain really, because it can be private too, and it can be used for nefarious purposes. It's a technology, a new type of database. That's all it is. It's a new way to save data, save information, stacking blocks of information. And it can be done in all different ways. Bitcoin is just one example. And there is no the blockchain. That would be like saying the wire, the wheel, right? Okay, I guess you could say, the wheel as in the conceptualization of what the wheel is, like the invention, the invention of the wheel led us towards automobiles. Well, the invention of the blockchain led us towards decentralized cryptocurrencies, led us to decentralized autonomous organizations, led us to different ways of voting and community decentralized systems. It's just a way to save information in a very public, open way that is immutable, which means it cannot be changed once it's set. So it does allow for human error, because that human error will get locked into the ledger forever. But it also allows to be, you know, it's like, it's really a representation of reality. It's like time. It's just a representation of time. Like if you're, we all mess up. We can't, you know, how many times have we wanted a time machine to go change a human error where we're like, damn it, I shouldn't have said that to that person. It triggered them. And now I have conflict and it's making my life suck. I wish I just would have held my mouth shut, or man, I shouldn't have done that little white lie, or I shouldn't have deceived that person, because now it's led to all these issues. If I just would have told the truth, you can't go back in time. You have to fix it. Same with the blockchain. Like you can F up in it and then you got to apply your change to it. So the core issue is, needs to be open source. It needs to be completely public. And so the code base needs to be accessible to everybody. And so Bitcoin is really one of the only properly done blockchains, because it wasn't created by a corporation or by specific individuals who launched it with coin pre-mined in their hands and all that stuff, which you see with most of them. With our project, we did the same thing. We did it fully open source. We launched it to anybody can start what we call minting, which is our ability to create the consensus on the blockchain. So everybody is coming to agreement with every block that this is the truth right now, right? And that, and are stacking those blocks of truth. And so there's no corporation behind it. There's no company. It's all open source. Anybody can join. Anybody can develop on its code base. And then there's a consensus of the developers with 60% say that's good. Then they'll apply that to the repository and make improvements to the code. And actually, that was one of the things we saw a problem with Bitcoin. And also one of the really powerful things with Bitcoin is that the universal law of Bitcoin. So like, if you understand universal law, right, there are immutable truths of this universe, if you believe in that. Mm-hmm. Natural law, universal law, where basically there are natural laws that define this reality, right? That we're all, you know, for instance, there's, and some people could call these the Hermetic laws, right? Or some, it depends on where you're coming from. But we know there are natural immutable laws to this universe. And so the same thing with Bitcoin. Bitcoin has essentially its immutable laws. Now that can be changed if there is enough miners and there's enough nodes, full nodes that agree to change the Bitcoin protocol. But it's become so massive and so decentralized that would be almost impossible to do now. Now that's a problem and a benefit. The benefit is that it makes it a very hard money. So those laws are set forever. So you've got the 10-minute blocks with the certain megabytes. You've got certain immutable truths behind the code base. And so then you have what's called forks of other projects that want to change Bitcoin, right? So you've got like Bitcoin Cash and BSV and all these other different Bitcoins that said, no, we don't like that. We want to change the code. And so you have different communities that agree, okay, I like that. I'm going to use that currency. But Bitcoin is special because it has the longest legacy of blocks. And people who have agreed this is what it is because we all agree that, and it's got 10 years of that now behind it. So that's really powerful. However, we've developed a way we're bringing in more of a democratic idea with levels and voting. So actually, Cordal can evolve over time. So let's say there's a quantum computing revolution that is now being able to hack the algorithms of the SHA-256 encryption. Well, we can actually vote to change the algorithms of the blockchain and apply that so to provide further security down the line. So if we're in like a war with robots or something, right? So these are innovations that we've applied to the Cordal public blockchain. So I believe innovation is always happening in the world. And actually, I believe even humanity through consciousness can create new realities. So we should be able to be flexible too with blockchain. So yeah, that's kind of where we are with the Cordal idea, is that not only did we launch it like Bitcoin, but also we brought in a number of different elements to it to allow for it to evolve over time through a leveling system, which is all just based on time. Everything in Cordal is based on time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, someone said time is money.
Time and energy. Those are the two factors. Mm-hmm. So time and then the energy that you put forth to do that. So Bitcoin, with that, they use mining, which is based on power. And that's another huge problem with Bitcoin, is we've seen that it's led to this race of power with the ASIC miners, which are just like a more complex way of doing mathematic equations, which is a type of computational machine, which requires a certain amount of power. And currently in the nature of our reality, power is what it's gotten through taking some sort of physical matter, whether that be sunlight in the form of rays of sunlight converting to electricity, or wind, or typically burning a fuel, right? And so there's problems with that. And we've seen that now Bitcoin is one of the leading contributors to energy use on the planet. That's right. The problem.
Right.
And so with Cordal, we wanted to fix that by going back to the original kind of idea behind Bitcoin, which was the idea was that everybody was essentially taking a role in the consensus by doing it with your own computer, by running your own computer to be taking part as a full node, which means you have the full blockchain on your computer, and you are competing with all the other computers to write the block so that it's just totally decentralized and power to the people, right? And of course, that was subverted by really smart, innovative people who were like, I want to have more power. So they started using these graphic cards and started developing faster computers that were just for Bitcoin mining. And now we are at today where we have a lot of the mining taking place with these huge factories in China, or these huge warehouses, these Bitcoin mining operations that use pools, so that people from all over the world can just join a pool and basically plug in their power to take part of the mining, which is what's generating the blocks. And now we have an issue of centralization. And well, so
the mining generates blocks. It's
correct.
Not the coin itself. It's the block that would house or host.
And that's what creates the coin. So with Bitcoin, with every block you get, a certain amount of coin is created. And we just had a halving. So basically the time is all set in blocks, right? That's what's beautiful about blockchain too, is everything's set in block time. So after a certain amount of blocks, we had what's called a halving, which just means now they cut in half the reward. So you have a reward for every time you find a block every 10 minutes, they issue a certain amount of Bitcoin to whoever finds it, right? And so that was always the economic incentive to mine. And so it was really quite brilliant, because it was bringing in supply and demand and free market capitalization ideas, right, to as the impetus, as the driving factor to taking part in consensus or taking part in driving the economic model of Bitcoin. But actually, one of the problems with Bitcoin is the way consensus works is for those running a full node. All that means is you have the entire ledger on your computer, and then you're online on the network and in tune with all the other nodes, right? And the problem with that is there's not a lot of full nodes anymore on the Bitcoin network because, one, it's really big, it takes a lot of time, and that's not mining. There's no incentive to do that. So that's a problem with Bitcoin. And so we tried to fix that with our minting consensus with Cordal.
Right. Yeah. Can you talk about the difference between mining and minting? Because when I heard your video, I'm like, holy mackerel. That was the first I'd heard of it. Sounds really, really innovative.
Yeah. So, well, a lot of people saw the problem with the proof of work model of using computer hashing power to drive the economics and the consensus for a blockchain because they saw, one, it was using a lot of energy. Two, it was leading to increased centralization of people who could afford to buy the mining equipment, right?
Right.
And to invest in it. It was also leading to inequality because there are certain places in the world who, for instance, like China, the reason why China exploded is because they didn't have the tight EPA regulations for dirty coal and cheap power that was done through burning fossil fuels. And so you had a lot of concerns for the environment. And you had a lot of innovative people who were seeing these problems back in 2014 with a project like PureCoin, which was like, how can we fix this proof of work issue with computers competing and using power? So they came up with this idea of proof of stake, which was a new consensus model, which once again, consensus is everything with any currency. We currently have consensus with the fiat dollar. Why we agree it's valuable is because the government has guns and the government says so. So that's the consensus, right? That obviously, if we come with a note to a business, we have the consensus because it says on there, you have to use this as legal tender or we will arrest and imprison you. So that's money by force. That's what fiat is, right? That's a currency by force. So with the beauty of, once again, of a digital currency like a blockchain currency is that the consensus is of the people who have all come to agreement saying, hey, we agree that this has value because it's on an immutable ledger that we all agree to it. It's like basically the original barting idea that of shells of the Native Americans. We all agree that these shells are scarce, so we're going to use this as our money because we all agree that they have certain natural things about them that are sale. It comes into salability, like they're rare, but they're easy to transfer. They can store value easily because of that. So we're going to all use that. So, basically, PureCoin was really the first that said, instead of saying that it's the computers competing against each other, we're going to say it's how much coin you have gives you a certain weight because you've decided to invest and own this coin. If you decide to stake that coin on the blockchain by running a full node, so you're taking part in consensus because you have all the current blocks, so it's there, so we can see all the previous ones. And by saying, I agree to, I have value on the network, I'm proving I'm a real human being, I'm a real, you know, person that is actually taking part in consensus because I have actually done what it's, either that's by buying them or somehow getting them, I have coin that I'm reserving in my wallet, and it's called proof of stake. And that's what essentially led to what's called the ICO, or the initial coin offering boom of what we saw with Ethereum, even that's a proof of work coin, but with all these other ones like the Cardanos and EOS and all these, you know, what people will call shit coins that blew up in 2015, 16, 17. And so that was innovative because it took out all those problems with Bitcoin with the wastefulness of the energy burning, right? Because now anybody can do that on any computer. You can run your wallet. All it takes is running a wallet with the whole blockchain and then staking your coins. The problem with that once again, it led to centralization, because now it's anybody who can buy the coins can take control of the consensus and can then basically do what's called a 51% attack on the chain, which means they can change the immutability of the ledger. And that's what proof of work stopped, because of just everything that's involved with all the computers competing with each other. And so that was the other beautiful thing about proof of work, is that made it very, very hard to manipulate the immutability of the blockchain. So it was a cool innovation, but once again, it had a lot of problems, because one, the only way you can really start a coin that has proof of stake is you need to pre-mine the coins. You need to make the coins so people can have them. So you can't start with a proof of work chain starting it. You start with zero coin. You start with zero coin, and then anybody can join and start mining and start creating the coin. So it's way more natural and way more organic. With a proof of stake project, you have to pre-mine all the coins. And the problem with that is, like, a lot of the founders then are basically just redoing what fiat does, which is printing the money, and a lot of them are controlling it. And so that's a big problem. Mm-hmm. So with Cordal, we wanted to get back to the original Bitcoin, but we did it. We wanted to solve a lot of the problems with the centralization, with the power issues, with proof of work, with the lack of egalitarianism, because you have people that can afford to buy either lots of coin or the mining operations. So minting was all based on the original cypherpunk idea of running a node, basically the BitTorrents, right? Where it breaks up an MP3 across thousands of computers, and everybody's sharing a little bit of that so that you could download through the whole piece. And so we took that idea, and it wasn't me. I came in later. This was 6 years of development, coming off an original project called Quora, which was Q-O-R-A, which was around Purecoin time, which was another one of those projects that was trying to innovate, like Purecoin and later Ethereum, by coming up, and they ended up going with proof of stake. And but we're really the first. Siam was the developer who really came up with the first smart contract on Quora, and actually had the first working atomic cross-chain swap between Quora and Burst, which is another crypto project, which has a very unique consensus algorithm called proof of basically hardware space, how much hardware space you apply to the network. I'm blanking on that algorithm. So anyways, this was all before Ethereum. So the basis behind Cordal was we took a totally built from the ground up blockchain and then rebuilt it. So it's not a clone off Bitcoin or Ethereum or anything else. It's totally built from the ground up, and it has it's called the minting protocol, which basically just says, if you can prove yourself on the network and run a full node over a certain amount of time, you will have a certain level of weight based on time. It's really simple, actually. And then based on your level of blocks that you've run your node continually, you start sharing in the pot of consensus. So consensus is it's built on the level system of time. So the higher level you are, the more chance you are of finding the block, but that doesn't give you any special reward. That reward is shared, split across everybody equally based on your level. So if you're a higher level, you get a little bit more percentage of that shared, but it goes across the whole thing. So it's basically one big pool. So we knocked out the pooling there's a lot of corruption in the Bitcoin pooling. We knocked that out because we said there is just one big pool and everybody's part of it. So it's very community focused in that sense. Some people would say, oh, that sounds like communism, you know, like share it with everybody. But there's no centralization. Communism is centralized, right? It's always, it makes you think it's not, but it because it sounds like it's just government of everybody for everybody. But we know that's not true. It always comes to a despot or somebody centrally controlling it, government, fiat, you know, all that. So this is really more of a holistic kind of sacred economy. If people are familiar with Charles Eisenstein, yes, and his Sacred Economics book, it's really more in line with that idea that we're all in this together and we're all sharing the abundance together. All you have to do is put your time and energy, and you can do that literally on a solar powered Raspberry Pi or a, or an old laptop or anything. And you just have to be connected to the internet and be running a node. And that's it. And then as you do that, you get higher levels of, for the amount of time. So as you go into the first year, then you go up a level, then another level, another level, another level. And then that's also how the voting works. So the higher your level goes, then the more voting aspects you get in terms of deciding things for the community, deciding things on where the future of the blockchain is going. And it's not voting by delegation. So one of the big evolutions of proof of stake was called delegated proof of stake, which is what EOS is, which is what Steam is for those who have used Steemit, the Dan Larimer projects. He was a big innovator with delegated proof of stake. And what that means is, like, basically they'll delegate 20, 100 nodes to be like the Congress, right? Like to be, but how do we delegate that? We delegate that by how much they're staking. So that means they can buy into the delegation, which means that's corruptible, right? Neo was one of my favorite projects when I first got into crypto, because I just was cool. I like Neo. I like the Matrix. It was Ant shares, and then turned into Neo. And that's a delegated proof of stake model. And, or excuse me, that's a delegated Byzantine fault tolerance model, which all that means is that you have delegated nodes who are making the decisions. So now you have Pepsi, or you have PepsiCo, or you have Bank of America, or you have, the Fed, whatever. They become delegators. Like, and so we're all, we're trapped in the box again. Right? We're back in it. So this was a big innovation, which was just basically like power to the people. Run a node, prove yourself over time, and get in the pot with everybody. And then also, because it only takes one confirmation, it's very fast. There's a lot of innovations. It's very fast. It's very scalable. We already have a working, basically, Telegram type decentralized chat system already working as a proof of kind of a proof of concept, but it's working. It's functions. Like if you join Qortal with a Qortal, and if you join Qortal by downloading the core and the user interface and then syncing up and running a full node, you can join right away in QChat, which is which is a blockchain based chat app, which fully decentralized encrypted, but it doesn't require transactions. And we've had blockchain experts, because thanks to Sayer G from Green Med Info, who helped us get the word out last month, and some other folks that are going to go on their shows, we've had a lot of interest now. We've kind of crossed the Rubicon into we've kind of stayed under the radar, because that's the other thing. For me, not like centralized exchanges for cryptocurrency, for the reasons I was explaining. It allows for manipulation. It's against everything the Bitcoin white paper was about, right? And it allows for the middlemen to come in and hold the funds and the bots trading and all this stuff to manipulate the markets. They can really crush upstart projects, open source projects, by allowing for people to come in and do pump and dumps and do like what they did to GameStop, right? People can come in and decide to put a bunch of because these are small liquid markets, put a bunch of liquidity in something, raise up the value, and then dump it. And we know crypto's famous for that with pump and dump schemes. And so that was one thing we said, we will not use centralized exchanges. And so we have a decentralized exchange on Qortal, because it's core to crypto. So we use cross-chain swaps. Originally, it was when we launched it last year, was Bitcoin and Qort, but now we're using Litecoin right now because it's faster and easier. So you can actually, there's liquidity. You have a direct P2P exchange in the system where you can, for the Qort you're earning by minting, you can then put a trade offer on, and you can put a sell up, and then people with Litecoin can come in and buy Qort. And Qort is basically the service coin that allows you to do things on the blockchain, like, buy your name, use it for all sorts of things down the line, which is also included with that will be decentralized web hosting, which is the big thing that Sayer G was really inspired by, because the system, it's a, basically was designed to be a decentralized CPU. So it can run decentralized web hosting through it.
And is that the URL that people would go to learn about it? Okay, very good. Just got that.
Yeah, and I took some time and redid the website. So the website, the new fancier looking website, will be up hopefully this week. So it will look nicer. But this, you can tell when you go to the website, you'll see this is a truly open source project. There's not a lot of glitz and glam right now, because everybody working on it is doing it literally out of the goodness of their own heart. There's no corporate money behind it. There's no way for a corporation to come and even invest in it, short of just donating money or coming in and buying Corp. So if you want to actually prop up the project, you can come in with Litecoin. And really the best way is just get in the network and start minting. But if you want to help the developers or become a developer, we need more developers, please join us on Discord. Eventually, everything will be on Court blockchain. So our entire Discord type functionality will be on Court. Our Git repository will be on Court. Everything will be on Court. I'll be running alphavedic.com on Court. I'll be running a reunion summit on Court. It'll literally allow us to create our own names and then use that as the hosting. There's the new type of naming structure, and then literally hosting content right on using the blockchain. So
that's awesome.
That is pretty innovative.
Very good. Amazing. And I think you might have already answered this, but I was just curious, because with that queue, I was telling somebody about it the day after I saw your video, and I hadn't really even noticed it was Q, not C. And so is there any significance at all in that letter Q, just because it's such a hot letter right now?
Yeah, I know, right? No, it just comes because the original Cora was Q.
Okay.
So the original blockchain project that this kind of stemmed off of was Q-O-R-A. So we just, to honor that, it's a portal into the old Cora or Cordal. So yeah, no, it's we were actually developing this way before the QAnons or any of that kind of stuff. So yeah, no, there's no relationship to that. And that stuff's, the QAnon stuff's all nonsense.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I just had to ask, because that it just pulses. It was like, you can't use letter Q. That's stolen now. Right? Like everything, they steal all the good stuff. Well, this has been amazing. I know that there's a whole lot of different subjects that you and I would talk about in addition to this, but I really, you know, I haven't actually covered cryptocurrency here on this channel yet. Amazingly, I'm coming at up at 100 episodes of the King Heroes Journey. There, I know, and that's in just the past year. There are so many King Heroes, and I wouldn't work at this pace if I wasn't so inspired by the people out there. But I'm very clear that these messages need to be heard, that we need to hold, not just men, but this was a redemption project for my career as a feminist. I consider myself to be a recovering feminist now. And there's just
you and you and Kelly Brogan.
Okay.
she talks about that all the time.
Okay, there you go.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, you've had like Matt Belair and Ollie Domagard and a bunch of people I really respect and count as friends. So you're doing a great job. And yeah, I'd love to come back on and talk about sovereignty. And we have the reunion summit coming up, which is something that I've been working on with Josh Del Sol from the 5G summit and Alpha Vedic. And really exciting. We've got, you know, people like Dolores Cahill and Sayer G and a massive, you know, Andy Kaufman, Troy Casey, the certified health nut, is like one of the kind of big voices in it, who's amazing. Who else? I mean, just Kelly Brogan. We've got a lot of like up and coming kind of big voices for sovereignty and alternative health and wellness on there. So it looks like we're going to have some other people joining that are pretty big, including the guy I mentioned earlier who was woke me up in the 90s. So yeah, really exciting. So that's reunionsummit.com, And we've launched the site last week, and it's going to launch on the spring equinox is the first day. And just couldn't, yeah, reunion.
Oh, it's got it wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you won't know me as a good speller.
So yeah, super pumped on it. And we're going to come hot out of the gates with an amazing first day of content with who's speaking. I believe, do you know who Chunya Murthy is? He's an amazing kind of voice right now for spirituality. Mm-hmm. And then a panel with Dolores Cahill and Catherine Austin Fitz and Sayer G. So
crazy. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've been stalking Catherine Austin Fitz a little bit. Haven't had a big breakthrough, but a little one.
Yeah.
So yeah, incredible lineup. And and the purpose, when you say reunion, what's the purpose behind the overall theme of the summit? Is it sovereignty, like you're saying?
Yeah, it's a health and wellness sovereignty, and just basically bringing humanity back, reuniting our focus towards sovereignty as a a global community. So kind of just going back to what it is to be human, and our core power. And we've been giving it away too much. And so it's about self-actualizing, but also community. It's really about community and reuniting as a global community and bringing, you know, we're trying to provide a platform for all these people to come together and have a space where we, through decentralization, can essentially apply our gifts towards helping humanity, you know, kind of transcend into this next phase, which we know will be cooperative, collaborative, decentralized, local, but yet it's, you know, it's kind of a dichotomy because it's decentralized and local, but also collaborative and communicative across the world together, right? So, excuse me, that's the idea of reunion, I guess, is kind of that. So, yeah, and this actually all stemmed from an actual in-person, 300-person camping event we did in Joshua Tree last October called Music and Sky. So a number of the workshops and stage talks and interviews took place. We filmed live there in front of a live audience in a 24-hour festival we did, camping festival. So we've got breathwork workshops and Qigong and Kundalini yoga. So this is a really interesting summit. You'll literally pull out your yoga mat and do some holotropic breath work and then listen to a stimulating talk with, you know, about germ theory or new Germanic medicine or notices of liability and natural law and stuff like that. So it's all about solutions. It's solutions focused, but also very much will have a lot of that inner dark night of the soul, inner work stuff built in too. Mm.
Well, it was right up my alley. So as soon as I hit the link, I immediately signed up and I went for even being an affiliate. So this is my affiliate link. Yeah. So I've posted in the chat here if you'd like to click on it and join. There is a free option, so you don't have to pay to be part of it. So you can still get all that juicy content. I just wanted to have the recordings on the other side, right?
Yeah, so it's based on the freemium model. So it just means that you get everything free for the first day. You can access all the talks, get into the live chat, full access. And we actually have three gifts that for registering for the free that we give to you right away. And then if you decide to get the full access pass, then you own all the content. And we have an early bird special right now. It's like $50. It's like over 35 talks, workshops, and interviews. And we'll have live panels going on during the week too. You can own that all and have, you know, permanent access to that. And then there's like a ton of amazing exclusive gifts that come with that. So, if you have a following too, and you're watching this and we have a 50-50 affiliate deal, so you can come on board 50-50 rev split share, you can become an affiliate and push this out to your community and, spread the love. And then, from this, we'll have an initiative coming out of that with the community, decentralized community building platform we're working on through Cordal, and will allow for people to create their own micro communities there and be active with their likes and interests through the reunion summit community. So this will be an evergreen event in that sense, as it will continue on. And we are partnering with people like Anarchapoco, other like-minded events because we do this physically like they do too. So we'll have our next physical event on the summer solstice up in the Redwoods here. It is a intimate camping event. It will be on the DL. To find it, you'll have to do a little bit of work to find us for that, but we will be filming that, and we will have really amazing talks and workshops going on there, and that will be the next reunion summit, you know, 6 months from there or whatever, however long it takes. So it is the model. It's in-person, then online, in-person, online. That's the model that we're doing.
Amazing, amazing. So speaking of Anarchapulco, what are you guys presenting there? Are you, you're not in person, I think I saw, right? You're doing a virtual...
Yeah, we're doing virtual, and actually, I'm not presenting this year. Dr. Berlando is for Alpha Vedic, so he's doing a presentation on basically terrain and, you know, bioterrain medicine 2.0, we call it. So the next evolution of bioterrain medicine, which is he's a specialist in. So he's doing a talk on the health and wellness day there, and then we will have a booth there. So we will have a virtual booth for Alpha Vedic there, so you can come visit us in this. They have this like actually really cool virtual interface, and I know everyone's like very in this, especially in our kind of scene, everyone's very skeptical because we know the Great Reset, this is what they're pushing, right? But this is a cool solution for now because it's allowing us to come together in a space and talk like we're doing right now. So you can come up to our virtual booth and we'll have someone there always. And we have offers for our products because we're an off-grid health and co-op. So we do teas and do all sorts of really killer health products. So we'll have a discount for people there and they can come and interact with us, ask questions. And so we'll have a booth there the whole event too.
Nice. And if people buy a ticket, do you have an affiliate code with them as well?
That I could we do.
Selfishly putting mine up there, but I can.
I think it's just Alpha Vedic, and then what do they put behind it? Alpha Vedic.
It's a 10.
Alpha Vedic 10. Yep.
Okay. All right. So if you don't have your Anarchapulco ticket yet, then you can visit anarchapulco.com. And use the code ALPHAVEDIC10 to check out, and that will give you the savings on that ticket. I think there are still some in-person. There's so much pain that I can't go. I've really been working on this. Oh, what they've done to us.
Yeah, I know. I was. I actually would have gone, but because we have reunion summit 2 weeks after, I just would have been a stress case. I was going to go and DJ the after party and I was going to go anyways. I was going to probably drive down to San Diego and then walk over the border and then fly from Tijuana to Acapulco. That's the way to do it, that I have some friends that do that. But next year, I'll be there next year.
Next year. Yeah, and I was there last year, so I'm still having that beautiful place in my blood and my bones. And I'm looking forward to speaking there as well on the virtual main stage. I was invited. I didn't beg, which is really fun.
Very cool.
And, super, super good. You know, I think that the most exciting thing about all of this is to see that, you know, especially with your reunion summits, that these are not just pockets of good things happening and, you know, there are little satellites out in every direction. What I see you King Heroes do are you're getting together, you're pooling your resources. You know, on Wednesday, I have Curtis Stone on here for an interview.
Love Curtis.
And I know, and start to, you know, get into the whole sovereignty thing and the liberty on the land theme, that all of these things tie in, whether it's the currency or the legalities that are being used against us in the commerce system or the food systems that we need on the other side of a food collapse, community working together and bringing the resources. All of this is intimately tied. You can't really break it out. So it does my heart good to watch all of these smart ones working together. This is what we need.
Exactly. Like helping each other out, you know, promoting each other's videos and podcasts and all that. That really has been amazing to see. And that's the antithesis to the current mainstream model, which is all competition and all kind of cutthroat and backstabbing and all that. So we continue on this path of collaboration and cooperation and helping each other. There's no way they can stop it.
Exactly. That is how we become unstoppable. We're not working because the house divided will fall. And that's where we're at. Well, this has been a sincere pleasure. Is there anything that you would like to leave us with in terms of a message for people to go forward, maybe to other King Heroes that haven't got out of the gate yet and are looking for courage?
Yeah, I mean, just life is a journey. Life is, we're all in our own kind of hero's journey, right? That's why you name the show as it is. And like, what do you have to lose? You know, this is all about going out and doing what is your passion. And I think the more we are of service and the more we give, the more universe gives back. That is the secret to abundance. And so the more you can go out and you can and be in service to your fellow man, get involved with your community, get involved more with your family, just anyone around you, try to do what I love with, you had Matt Belair on the show and he's a homie of mine. And he says, you know, do 3 kind acts a day without talking about it, without even, you know, bragging about it or telling anyone. That alone is revolutionary. So be of service, find what your journey is, or, you know, find what your passions are and go out and live life to the fullest every day. And, you know, Mother Nature will always show you the way. If you feel lost, if you feel confused, if you're frightened and anything, go on a nature hike. It doesn't matter where you live. Even if you're in the heart of the city, go find a park, go meditate, go put your feet, your bare feet in the grass and get in touch with Gaia, with this garden plant. And you will get messages and you find your way. And yeah, that's what I've learned relatively recently, is the act of giving is so, so important. And you do that and everything will be taken care of.
Your true wealth is in what you have to offer, right? Yep. It's not what you receive that makes you feel good. That's all nice, but it's seeing what comes out of you that is the truly enriching and fulfilling experience of life.
Yep. That's why we're here.
Exactly. That's the makings of purpose, right? The way that you're connected and contribute back to humanity. So yeah, I see a lot of happiness on you and other people like you. So that's very good. Do visit alphavedic.com to see many episodes of AlphaCast and see the breadth of the work that they're doing with Barlando and some other great folks there. So if you are interested to find out more about me as well, you can visit bethmartins.com. The ticker is going past there. There, as I mentioned, is 100 videos. I think there's 87 of them are King Hero's Journey and the other are rants. So I'm pretty good at ranting as well. Have a lot of fun with it in this beautiful audience. And I would love to, no pressure, I'm putting you on the spot here, but I'd love to send you a copy of my book, Mike. It is called Journey. Cool. A map of archetypes to find lost purpose in a sea of meaninglessness. So this has been my mission. I published it 5 minutes before an Acapulco started last year and the pandemic got well in its way. So I feel like that was very, very sacred timing. I might not have finished in the chaos after that, but it set me up to move forward. And so you're getting lots of good props here that people are loving. I love the interview, and thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today, Mike.
Thank you for all the work you do, and I'd be honored to have your book and just continue cooperating and putting the word out. So thanks for everything you do.
Totally my pleasure. I hope you have a beautiful rest of the day, and bye to everyone in the chat.
Later, guys.
Okay. Bye for now.